Some guy called over here, a doctor. He's looking for a driver. You interested?
I am not a medical doctor. I'm a musician. I'm about to embark on a concert tour in the Deep South. What other experience do you have?
Public relations.
That was a scene from Green Book, a movie that made my 10 best list of the year, 2018. I'm Neil Rosen, joined
Mine
by...
Mine too, by the way.
Joined by Bill McCuddy.
Hello.
And Bill Bregoli.
Hi there.
And this is our year-end special podcast where we tell you our favorite movies of the year and maybe some of our worst movies of the year too. And the reason we started with a scene from Green Book is, as Bill McCuddy just said, it's on both of our 10 best lists. It's actually my number two movie on my best list.
What are the odds? And, it's also my number two.
And I know Bill Bregoli's not doing numericals, but would this wind its way on your favorite movies of the year, Bill?
Sure, but not one or two. It would probably have be like 10.
Okay, but it would make...
So it would just squeak onto your list.
Yeah,
it might
so
be 11.
Squeak.
So interestingly, this movie does make all of our lists. Higher up on Bill McCuddy and my list
not
than
so
your list.
Mine.
But okay. So,
and not because I went to endless lunches and met Mahershala Ali and Viggo Mortensen, and we talked at length about it, Peter Farrelly as well. And not because I live across from Carnegie Hall, where I could actually see Don Shirley's apartment.
God.
But because I just really think it's a great movie.
Well, you know, I love the movie. I grew up in the Bronx, and very near that neighborhood, it takes place in 1962, very near that neighborhood where Viggo Mortensen's character, first of all, for those who haven't seen the movie, and it's out in theaters right now, it is about a road trip taken by sort of a, Viggo Mortensen plays this tough guy bodyguard in 1962 who works at the Copacabana in Manhattan. They close the place for a bunch of months for renovations. He needs a job, gets a job driving this brilliant master pianist played by Mahershala Ali, based on a true story, guys, Don Shirley, of the Don Shirley Trio, who has to do a tour of the Deep South. And this is in 1962 in the Jim Crow segregated racist Deep South, and he needs protection, and he hires this bouncer guy played by Viggo Mortensen.
And right before they're about to leave, the record company that hires them says, by the way, you're going to need this green book, which is a booklet. Not there was no NAACP at the time, but some like black AAA group that put this list
there
of
was
hotels,
a real
restaurants,
called,
and
right. that made it safe for black places that were safe for black travelers during this time period to eat at and to stay at,
right?
In a pre-civil rights South, and at first they don't get along at all. I mean, Viggo is sort of like a he's like right out of Goodfellas where Mahershala's character is this refined, cultured guy, and it's kind of like a real clash, like an odd couple kind of scenario. But they do become friends ultimately when they face a lot of racist incidents. And, Viggo's character is kind of racist in the beginning, and Don Shirley, played by Mahershala Ali, is kind of close-minded, and they find common ground and they forge a friendship. And when they have to face these ugly racist incidents over the course of the movie, over this thing, I love the movie. It was directed by all people of Peter Farrelly of the Farrelly brothers, who did such movies as Dumb and Dumber and There's Something About Mary in Shallow Hal. And here he's
Kingpin.
Going
from Kingpin to this,
right? And this is a dramedy. It's certainly there are funny parts, but there's certainly very, very serious parts. I was emotionally moved by the movie at the end. I learned some things and I laughed. So what more do you want from a movie? I love the thing. I think it's great.
Well, the what more that they want is the haters are now saying that this isn't exactly the true story, that it's a white, what they like to call a white savior movie. The opposite is true for me, at least my experience as a white middle-aged movie critic. So I'm bringing that to it, I admit. But to me, they save each other and they're necessary for each other in terms of the growth and the arcs that they go through, and I'm disappointed to read, you alluded to it on the last podcast, Neil, some of the family members
of Don Shirley
are coming out and saying, wait, they weren't as good of friends as this movie would make.
He says they weren't friends at all.
Well, you know, who knows what the truth is? The problem, the sour grapes that may be coming from them is that they weren't consulted at all in the making of the film, and so I don't know what the truth is. What I know is I saw a nice little movie. I liked it a lot. The haters can hate all they want, but audiences should decide whether they like it as a movie or not, because as we talked about last week on Vice, which I think is more important that that's more accurate. It's
Vice
not
is my
to
number
be...
three movie oh, on my all right. 10
does,
best.
Does
list.
Not make my 10 best.
And the reason is, you know, I mean, as I said last week on the podcast, the Dick Cheney story told with humor, and who knew anything about this guy? And, you know, Adam McKay, who also has a comedy background, like Peter Farrelly, having done all those Will Ferrell comedies, is telling you the Dick Cheney story and entertaining you along the way. And, you know, from his early days, which I knew nothing about, as a young man who was drunk and couldn't hold on to these blue-collar jobs, who said, his wife, played by Amy Adams, said, I'm leaving you, I'm out of here unless you turn it around. He goes, I'll never disappoint you again. To his clinging on to Donald Rumsfeld, played by Steve Carell, and, you know, and or the scenes with Sam Rockwell as George W. Bush saying, I'll turn the whole reins, you know, not in so many words.
Well, we basically went into this last week.
Yeah, you could run the whole show if you become my vice president.
I said that I was a little heavy-handed, a little too liberal. I'm not a liberal. I mean, I'm not a conservative.
Would it be on your 10 best list?
It is not on my 10 best list, but I like what you're doing with the way we're climbing up and not telling anybody what our number one is until the end. That's smart. You started with number twos. I will give you my number three.
Before we do that, I want Bill Bregoli's thoughts on, you said Green Book would be number 10. What did you like about the movie, and also Vice?
Green Book?
Yeah, Green Book.
It's very enjoyable. My reservations out are, it's so enjoyable, but it becomes obvious after a while that it's obviously built as a crowd pleaser.
It is a crowd pleaser, but as Bill McCuddy says about crowd pleasers,
it's a bit too obvious.
Yeah, when formula works, I don't mind it. Yeah. I will say that I never honestly felt these two guys were in any real danger. And there's one of the things Don Shirley's nephew says about it is in the article we were talking about last week and again this week, is that he knew Robert Kennedy, and that becomes important at one point in the movie, but he also knew Martin Luther King, and he also marched at Selma, and there were a lot of things that Don Shirley did that aren't mentioned in the movie that do seem now that I...
The complaint about the movie by a lot of people is that it's this white savior thing.
Right, what I said
right.
earlier.
And, you know, this was written by Tony Lip's son. And, I mean, maybe the movie isn't what it should be to all people, but this is a son telling the story of his father as told to him.
Right.
You know,
because the son, we should point out, doesn't go on this trip with the dad.
Right.
So the dad comes home,
and
tells
says,
his
Here's
version
what happened,
of the story. Right.
And the son, you know, said, okay, you know, this is kind of like I'm writing this thing about my dad. So it's really, and if you look at the movie, the first 20 minutes, Mahershala Ali, who they're putting up for supporting actor, not actor, isn't even in the movie. I mean, it's really this story of...
If we want the Don Shirley story, we learned from this article.
That's another
There's
movie.
A documentary coming that was shot actually about Shirley that he contributed to.
I think it's
so
up
maybe
on
that's
YouTube.
Coming.
So, well, this is
so
a story
you
liked, about a...
You like Green Book.
Yeah, I did. I like.
We
it,
know what the story know. Is. So they like Green Book.
Vice.
And Vice would not be on your 10 best?
No, Vice would be. Vice would be further up on my... Yeah.
Oh, okay.
If you were like, would it be in the top five?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because I gave me number three.
I felt enervated when I finished watching it. It was like...
Enervated?
Oh, enervated. Excited.
Well, all right, yeah. Yeah,
I'd like to use bigger words.
Okay, yeah, all right,
so
I learned the word today.
Your Vice is... Your
and
number
you would
three
not
is Vice,
on
not on my 10 best. It's in my top 20, as I said last week, and I'll repeat again today. It's just a little too ham-fisted, and I laughed out loud, and I think Christian Bale's good. But my number three went a little more highbrow than yours. So now we're going to climb up to five. I like the way you're going here. Cold War. And
this is a foreign movie.
Yes, you do, because it would be on your 10 best list, I promise you. Last week you went on a railing, and Netflix turned your account off, about Roma. And my joke about, or my statement that everyone's quoting as a joke I made, is that if you can see only one black and white subtitled foreign film this year, please make it Cold War instead of Roma. This is a less than 100-minute epic about a love story between two people. It is so unbelievably engaging.
So it's not all political?
No, well, it has a political backdrop because it happens during World War II, but part of it does. But it's about two young people. Then they're separated, and I don't want to tell too much more about it. It's it's beautiful to look at.
You have sold me. I am going to watch
this
movie.
This week made the short list of foreign films. It's from Poland, and I hope that it wins. What's your number four?
Is it cropping up on a lot of 10 best lists, or are you standing alone?
No. It's on a lot of 10 best lists. You are conspicuous by your absence there.
My number four, and you haven't seen it either, Bill Bregoli,
No, I haven't.
My number four movie is a movie that Bill McCuddy doesn't like, and I don't understand why, because I love this movie.
Oh, boy.
And it's called The Hate U Give. And the U is the letter U. And director George Tillman
U is for unwatchable.
Jr. takes the subject of Black Lives Matter, and like another movie, Ben is Back, which I'll talk about in a moment, humanizes it. Instead of giving you a whole scope, like we were talking in the podcast last week about, you say that one of my complaints with biopics is they try to tackle too much in some of them.
Too much time.
Humanizes it through the story of one girl. Now, this is an ingenious premise. She lives in an urban neighborhood, and the parents want her to get a better education than what's being offered in that neighborhood. So they send her to a predominantly white, preppy high school. And she goes, "In this, when during the day when I'm at the school, I'm whatever her character's name is, 2.0. And then she's 1.0 when she goes home. So she's living two different versions of her life. And when she's with the white kids, she's like buying into all their like, oh.
With the white kids, she has a white boyfriend.
Oh, I can't believe he didn't ask you to the prom. Oh my goodness, you're going to wear that? Do you think he's going to bring you flowers? And when she's living in the urban area, it's a whole different other set of problems.
Right.
And she's able to navigate both worlds until, I'm not really giving any away, there's a shooting, and she's the only witness to a shooting.
Right.
And that's going to kind of blow her cover in the uppity preppy high school, and she's reluctant to do that. She has a dilemma, but as she's facing that dilemma...
Amandla Steinberg is her name, by the way.
Amandla Sternberg, I think it is.
Stenberg.
Stenberg.
She is phenomenal. I think she deserves an Academy. It's the best female...
She was charming at all of the luncheons I attended.
It is
the
best
dinners.
Female performance I have seen
all
year.
She was on
the
cover of Time magazine.
She's incredible. The guy who plays her father is tremendous.
Right.
And
most electrifying, you always say start with what I like, most electrifying first 5 minutes of a film of the year when he's explaining to them what to do at the dining room table and when the police pull them over, what to do with their hands and how to
That's
act.
That's brilliant.
It's really, really, really a great
scene. Exercise and foreshadowing.
Instead of hitting you over
so
the head.
So I think maybe you just saw the first 5 minutes, Neil.
No,
did you
I saw
stay
the whole
for the
movie.
Whole thing? Because you did
you
not
know
see
interesting
Cold
about
War.
That movie?
You did not see Cold War.
I'll tell you what's interesting about that movie is that the white boyfriend of Amandla Steinberg,
her character,
was after the movie was wrapped, shot in the can, and sort of like Christopher Plummer replacing Kevin Spacey in whatever the name of that movie was that looks at
All the Money in
the World,
the Ridley Scott film.
They went back and had to because racist tweets came out attributed to the actor who played the white boyfriend. And they cast somebody else, and they had to reshoot a lot of scenes. And that guy's in a lot of scenes. And it's funny, I didn't know this till after I saw the movie, and I will tell you that I didn't think that Amandla's character and that white actor had a lot of chemistry. So that's kind of interesting.
So the key relationship in the film didn't work for
it's
you,
not the key
and
relationship
it's still
the key relationship in the film.
What are we up to, number four?
It's not really a key relationship. The key relationship in the film, it's not really a key relationship. It's really about the story of her.
But it's her access to the white world besides the school.
No, I just didn't think they had a lot of chemistry, but I think the movie is so tremendous, bringing back...
Bill, did you see The Hate U Give?
Yeah, I did.
Is Tell it on your top 10?
It would probably be down toward 9, yeah.
Really?
It's okay, yeah. I
watched it on your recommendation.
Yeah.
You're the one who told me to watch this
I know, but it still ends up around 9. I got some others.
Well, tell me.
Well, wait a minute.
I liked performances more than... You know, the book supposedly has a very different depiction
ending.
Of the shooting?
And and the ending is different.
And the ending, so that... Just hearing that makes me wonder about it.
Well, I will tell you that the problem with this movie is not the performances because they're all really good. It's about one or two crowd protest scenes too long. Mm. And the script for me, Neil, does not work at all about this black girl in a white school. First of all, the friends that she has outside of that school wouldn't want nothing to do with her. They wouldn't. It's all false premise to me.
What do you mean?
The world she lives in, she should be so disliked in her own community. And
she plays two different roles.
I understand she still
like
has to live in both places.
I'm not talking
places.
About the character. I
know. Yeah, and I understand that.
You know, behaves one. It's like people say, like, you know, there's work Bill McCuddy and there's home Bill McCutty. You know what I mean? It's like you behave some. Okay. She's behaving differently in the white
school.
I understand
what you're saying.
Then she behaves around
It doesn't ring true for me. The other thing that doesn't ring true after this shooting you alluded to, she becomes a key witness and
reluctantly.
There is no reason in my. The movie presents her as a reluctant witness that the entire black community does not want to have come forward. And I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I think they would want her to testify. They would want her to bring down this bad kingpin guy who she can is capable of doing. So it's wrong-sided for me on both of those two plot points.
Bill,
to the point of actually ruining the movie for me. And it's also too long.
Yeah,
Bill, since it's on your 10 best list, and you're the one that recommended me. Tell me what you liked about the movie. You liked the performances.
I liked the performances.
And you told me that you had problems.
I liked the performances. And I liked the performances.
But you said, you said earlier, because of the book, you thought that things were
off. Yeah, there were things in it, and it was a bit too long. And
didn't you think the father, I know you liked
the father I didn't like, actually.
Wow.
I didn't like the father.
Still on your 10 best list. But I could pick your choices apart.
All right, so I love the movie. Okay. Tell me, you said, Bill, you had some other...
We haven't mentioned yet, Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Can You Ever Forgive Me? Well, what... So that would be...
Oh, that'd be like four...
Okay, so now we're up to number four. Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about your number four.
Yeah.
Well, number four was my... Right, was The Hate You Give for me.
Right, okay. So
did you give your number four?
In a second, but let's hear about... Because I love this movie.
Yeah.
It's not on my top 10 list, and it's maybe a mistake.
It's not on my top 10 list either, but I really like the movie.
It's kind of a perfect little movie, actually. Yeah. We're talking about Melissa McCarthy and Richard E. Grant.
It's his pick. Let him
I'm just saying...
But I'm going to do it short, because if we already reviewed this film, so I'm just going to say I liked her... Her performance is, you know, what they always say, an unlovable character. She's unlovable, and you probably would not want to be in the same room as this woman, but you'd love watching her.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we often talk about these movies that have nobody to like in the movie. And
it's a true story about an author who can't sell her own books and winds up making a living forging letters from famous writers and selling them. That's basically the story.
And she's kind of a pill to spend any time with. So I think Melissa McCarthy's performance is so winning, and Richard E. Grant is so great as
Well, that's what I loved about the film. I think Richard E. Grant, that's the best supporting performance that I've seen all year. She's good, Melissa McCarthy. I'm not taking anything away from her. But he's incredible. I mean, you don't walk away from the movie going, wow, Melissa McCarthy was incredible.
I think they'll both be Oscar nominated, by the way.
But he was incredible.
Well, I walked away from
this,
thinking she'd
get gay freeloader, I guess.
He's going to win, I'm going to predict, actually.
Yeah.
Although the Mahershala Ali, some of the other people that are...
I agree with you, because Mahershala Ali won for Moonlight 2 years ago. And I agree with you. I think that... Richard, it's the best supporting performance I've seen.
All right, let's move on, because we got a lot more territory to cover.
So
my number four, both of you have not seen, I guarantee, and you have never heard of. It's a very small film called A Prayer Before Dawn.
Are you
it's
kidding?
It's a real-life story.
You think
of the
I didn't
boxer.
See A Prayer Before Dawn? A Prayer Before... I never saw
it. It's the real-life story of an English boxer in a Thai prison. It's bloody. It's unbelievably brutal and straightforward, and nobody saw this movie except me. Please, if you saw it and you liked it, or you didn't like it, shout at us on Twitter. But A Prayer Before Dawn, my number four, highly recommend it.
By the way, I will now see that movie on your recommendation. This is not on my 10 best list, but just the way I gave Bill Brigoli props for recommending The Hate U Give, something that I might not have watched. You recommended a movie to me months ago, and my wife and I were looking for a movie to throw onto the DVD player the other day, and I'm going through the pile of screeners that they send us because we vote in the Critics' Choice Awards, and I came across this movie called A Simple Favor with Blake Lively and
Anna
Kendrick. And I said, McCutty said that this is really fun.
Mrs. McCutty loved it, too.
And I have to tell you, from the French music where it begins, like, it's just quirky and weird.
It's not my top 10, but if I was doing top 10 comedies, that would certainly be
And it's directed by
Paul Feig.
Paul Feig, did, which we spy with Melissa McCarthy. Yeah. Speaking of Melissa McCarthy.
No, this has, it has some kind of weird turns, but I was
be
with
on
them
my
all.
10 best
Anna
list,
Kendrick is awesome.
But it's...
And Blake Lively's funny.
I've never seen Blake Lively be that bitchy of a character on screen, including Gossip Girl. The TV show. But yeah, so thanks for that.
Sure.
But anyway, so you're I don't know your number five pick, A Prayer Before Dawn.
No, my number four was A Prayer Before Dawn. My number five, I thought was where you were going with this, but it was a dead end. But thank you anyway. I appreciate the props. My number five is another thing that a lot of people didn't see. It's John Hamm in Beirut. This is the Tony Gilroy screenplay that this came out almost, I think I saw it this time last year. And I thought, God, I can't believe they buried this thing because it didn't really come out until January or February.
Right.
John Hamm is a long way from Madison Avenue. He's living in Beirut. Something horrific happens in the first 10 minutes. 10 years later, he's asked to go back to Beirut to help solve a hostage situation. He doesn't want to go. It's written by the same guy that wrote Michael Clayton, and Tony Gilroy's written so many great movies. I directed a few as well, and he directs this. I think this is one of the best things John Hamm has ever done, and so Beirut is my number five.
All right.
What else? Pick another movie.
I pick another. How about Crazy Rich Asians?
Oh, it's my number 10.
Oh.
Okay. I hate that movie. I hate it. I don't dislike it. My daughter likes it. My wife loves it. My wife read the book. She bought the next book.
Yeah.
She loves the movie. It's a crowd-pleasing movie.
Yeah.
Maybe I came late to the party on it because everybody loved the movie.
Speaking of parties, you never showed up at the Warner Brothers party where Michelle Yeoh and Ken Jeong were at talking about this thing. And I have to tell you, I didn't have any expectations for this movie.
You were going
to
see it twice. Bregoli and I to try to crash another
screening. I like seeing comedies twice. I went to a Peggy Siegel. She's a PR person in town. Party and premiere for this movie like months ago, before it ever came out.
I'm going to backpedal. Okay.
It's
hate
hilarious.
Is too strong of a word. No, I don't hate the movie. Here's what I dislike. I came late to the party. I heard it was this great, great movie. And again, my expectations were too high. Had I seen it months before like you did, I would not have loved the movie.
By the way, to your point, knew nothing about it. It looked like a dopey sitcom to me.
So I came late to the party to this thing, and, you know, when I saw it, had I seen it like you, Bill McCuddy, you know, months earlier where I knew nothing about it, I think I would have been a little more amenable to the movie, but I still
would have been way more surprised.
But I would have said to myself, I've still seen this movie many, many times before. I mean, with white people. What makes it unique is that it's with an all-Asian cast. And look,
it's real estate porn. You want to go to Singapore as soon as that
movie's
over.
I've never been to Singapore. I've never seen Singapore. Now I'm like, wow, this is interesting. I get to see Singapore. But the story was so predictable. I mean, you just know where it's going from the very first. I mean, you've seen this. I've seen this movie 100 times.
It's a romantic comedy. That's
got
a formula.
So I don't see what the big
to-do
is
anymore.
Now, let's say you cast this movie with Justin Timberlake.
No, I'll make your point
Anna
for
Kendrick.
You because you seem to be searching.
Like
no, you, it's been made before. It's been My Best Friend's Wedding. It's been like
it's been made 100 times before.
Right,
it's
but
fun
this
to
is
watch.
Very fun to watch.
All right,
Ken Jeong
would certainly not be on my. I don't hate the movie, but I'm not a fan of the movie.
All right, so we said we would do our top five.
So
we did. I'm just going to throw in my. Well, what's your number five?
Okay, mine is The Favorite. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of these period piece, Victorian
period.
Era.
Oh, you mean period. I was
costume drama things. You know, this Merchant Ivory. They're all so self, Jane Austen. They're all so self, so serious.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
That's what makes this good.
Right. And I mean, Remains of the Day I kind of liked because that had some humor in it. But generally, they're just so overly serious. And Jesus, here's a movie where they're doing a bawdy comedy where the queen is do I give it away? I mean,
the queen? Yeah, you gave that away already.
Well, the queen, Anne, played by Olivia Colman, who Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone are both courting her favor because whoever is the favorite, like the title of the movie, gets to kind of, the queen doesn't really want to run the kingdom. You know, so she, whoever's kind of like in her favor, who's her favorite, gets to really be the power behind the throne. And, should I give away?
No, I don't think you have to say much more. Tell them who made it. The guy that made The Lobster and has done very off-putting movies before. And this is like his, you know, sort of mainstream movie. This is his foray into bigger films. And I think it's very successful on that level. But I'll tell you something based on what you just said about Crazy Rich Asians. I saw The Favorite late in the game after everybody had been saying
way. I understand saw the very first screening.
I understand that. What I'm telling you is
I knew nothing. I saw it the same day I saw Green Book.
I heard. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And did you? Would you? No, would the favorite feature. Be on your 10 best?
Yeah, it would be. Absolutely.
Okay.
Tell me why.
Because it's I love dark comedies, and this has got some really appealing women all giving good performances, and they do some things that I didn't like. I didn't like the fisheye lens. Some of that soundtrack.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Fish Eye Lens.
It's a technical term, Neil.
I didn't hear you. It's technical. I just didn't hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That after a while, that got to me. I mean, first couple times, it was cool.
So what I started,
by the way, some of those lines that Emma Stone
very funny.
Delivers, but they're so
right. Okay, we get it. It's your favorite. It's your number five.
Yes.
It would be probably in my top 20, but let me just say that the... I did the opposite of you. I came late to the party. Everybody said they're all three of these women are going to be Oscar nominated. They may all win. The movie is going to be nominated for Best Picture. I was expecting a little more. It has a third act that kind of fizzles for me.
Yeah, I would agree that the third act isn't as strong as the
first. But here's the real thing for me, and I respect this lobster guy, but like...
I like this lobster guy.
What I'm saying is it wasn't quite funny enough and it wasn't quite historical enough. And there was something which he probably would like as a director, but I didn't, where I was sort of put off by the whole movie. It just wasn't quite gelling for me. Hmm. I think there are lots of funny, when they go bird shooting and stuff. There's some amazingly funny stuff.
The naked guy being pelted by fruit.
Yeah, that guy
just came out of nowhere. Like what? My wife and I were talking about like
some of that.
Where is
some
it,
of that's just a little off-putting.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yes.
By the way, is
that's
the
why
director.
We
yes. Of
he's
the, movie.
The when you go to the movies and you see the scramble word. His word is regular, and you just go, wait, who's that? Okay, so that's our top five. We've almost spent an hour doing this. So let me round out my top 10 for you.
Before we get to
Neil
the number one
the
picks?
Same thing. Before we do number one.
By the way, before we move off from the favorite, I'll just say that Olivia Colman, who plays the queen, they're putting her up for best actress, and they're trying to
supporting for the other two.
They're trying to, what's the word?
They're marketing the other
Olivia
two.
Olivia Colman is the supporting performance. Well, I think Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone are
the
leads.
But there you go.
Okay. But it's on your top 10 list, too.
Absolutely.
And
it's
what number
would top.
Top
It'll
five?
Probably be one.
Number one. And why would it be number one?
Because I liked it the most.
You always ask him the same thing three times.
Well,
wait, what did you like about it? But tell me what you liked about it.
Right.
Wait a minute. Let me one more thing.
All right.
What did you really like about it?
I thought I've never seen a period costume drama. Victoria, like, done, bawdy, crazy.
Neil's wife just gave me the high sign for the three questions. All right, so look.
So round out your list, and then we'll get to our number
okay,
one.
Very quickly, Boy Erased is my number six, which I know you didn't care for that much.
I thought it was okay. I thought it, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, I think that it could have used a little levity, like that Chloe Grace Moretz movie, which dealt with also Pray Away the Gay conversion therapy groups. There was at least a character in there. It was just so.
Did you see that yet?
No, I'm quoting you.
I'm saying
it could have used some levity.
No, we've got screeners.
The other
I
thing
think you
was
should
just,
watch it.
Just two.
It's called The Miseducation of Cameron Post.
I'm just saying
that this it was. It's a serious topic, and it deserved some serious attention. But I'm just saying, I needed a break somewhere along the line.
This is us just saying the rest of the top ten. Okay, so my number six is Boy Erased. My number seven is Hal, a documentary about Hal Ashby. Right.
Where do we see that? I want to watch that.
That's online right now.
Where?
Eighth grade.
No, I'm serious.
Search it and you'll find it. I have no idea what platform it's on. It's not on Netflix.
Okay. I want to watch
it. Might be on Amazon. Eighth grade was about a girl dealing with becoming a young woman. She's great, Elsie Fisher.
But she was great. A little disappointed with the movie. It was like a little, but I thought it was a good movie, not a great movie.
It was No Hate U Give, I give you that.
It was not.
Ninth of Crazy Rich Asians, as I said. And number 10, and it made the short list, it's another documentary, is Free Solo.
Right.
This is the literal cliffhanger about the film that could have been a snuff film if the guy died, but he didn't.
Which won a shitload of awards at the Broadcast Film Critics Association.
Right.
Critics
it also
Choice
made the short
Awards.
List for the Oscars, and I think maybe this has an edge over that Mr. Rogers movie.
I think that
only
Mr.
Because,
Rogers movie is going to clean up
everything.
Yeah,
but they screwed the two people that made this film, Jimmy Chin and his wife, Elizabeth, for Maru 2 years or 3 years ago. I have a feeling they're going to make good this year.
Well, did you
Free
see
Solo.
The Hollywood Reporter released a short list?
That's what I just said. It made the shortlist for the Oscars.
Yes, but you
didn't
really...
It wasn't just the Hollywood Reporter.
It made all the papers
yes,
there.
Yes, right, right. But, yeah, I mean,
Clark Kent.
I have not seen it, but guy climbing these unbelievably tall mountains without any ropes is kind of like... It's like, pitch meeting? Like,
okay, so I will tease in a way, then we can have a segue here.
We'll all go through our remains, and we save number one.
Number one is also a documentary that did not make that short list, and I'll reveal that in a few minutes.
Now,
so what's your...
Bill, tell me some other movies that are on your list.
Other movies, Won't You Be My Neighbor, I really enjoyed.
Mr. Rogers.
You know what? I said it last week, but I'm going to say it again. It's a late entry, but I really did like Bumblebee.
Okay, so the Bumblebee would on your time. Really, by the way, none of us have seen The Mule with Clint Eastwood, correct?
Oh, I have.
Oh, okay.
But it doesn't make
That's not on your 10 best? Is Eastwood going to get nominated for Best Actor?
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a whole other kind of thing. Maybe we could talk about it in January, about the fact that what happened there and why did The Mule not get awards consideration? They didn't really promote the film, but that's a whole other conversation. Okay.
Can I just point out, no one has Roma on their top 10 list.
Well, Roma is in what I would call my most... underrated movie of the year. I actually have a list.
Underrated.
That's another
show.
Overrated. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm so sorry. That would be on my most overrated film of the year.
And which we went into a lot of detail on last week,
right.
So we won't bore anybody.
My number six film, and I only have, a top six, not a top, not a top 10, because I don't think the other films would be Ben is Back with Julia Roberts and Lucas Hedges.
Okay.
I think just like... The Hate U Give, focusing on one person and one story.
Right.
And
one
here
short
is,
period of time.
You know, there's an opioid and drug addiction problem in this country, but instead of looking at the whole thing, it just takes place over one kid in one family, played by Lucas Hedges, who comes home, breaks out of his drug rehab facility to spend Christmas with his family, mother's Julia Roberts.
Right. No, we know the story.
Yeah. And... a lot of shit happens.
It devolves into kind of a Scooby-Doo mystery in the middle for me, where they're driving around town trying to find something.
And
but
since Boy Erased, Lucas Hedges is great this year. I mean, not only is he in Boy Erased, not only is he in Ben is Back, he's also on Broadway right now in a terrific play called The Waverly Galleries with Elaine May and Michael Cera.
He's also in something called Mid-90s, which
Jonah
Hill
directed.
Did. So.
Right. So that would be named number
Drum
six.
Drum rolls now.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Honorable mention. I would put A Simple Favor, just an honorable mention, which I talked about earlier. Two movies I want to mention. I'm not going to go through my order. I'm just going to say.
Please don't.
Movies that you have to see in this new Dolby theater where the seats vibrate and the sound shoots at
you
from
everywhere. Let me guess. Bohemian Rhapsody and A Star is Born.
Absolutely.
But let's have a 30-second conversation about which
I don't
is
know
better.
If I...
Which is better and why? Which is better, A Star Is because
A Star
whenever
is
I go to a cocktail party right now, everybody goes, should I see Bohemian Rhapsody or should I see A Star Is Born?
If you see them in these theaters, A Star Is Born is the better movie, I think. But if you like Queen and you see it in the Dolby thing, I mean, every song comes up and you go, oh man, I love
very cliche.
I love
though.
This. Yes, yeah. But if I saw,
were
either,
you at that lunch with Rami Malek that I was at the Russian Tea Room the other day?
No, but he was wearing a really ugly shirt at that, by the way. I will say that. I don't know how either of those movies would hold up if you just saw them in a regular theater or on DVD because, you know, it's so enhanced by the experience. And I don't know if that's part of the movie. That's
First,
the experience.
First Man is a good example of something that didn't make my 10 best list because I don't think everybody can go see it in IMAX. But if you do see it in IMAX, I think it's really, really good.
Okay, the movie I didn't get this year that made a ton of money.
Oh, this could be anything.
Is Ready Player One.
Right.
I couldn't handle it, but maybe if you're 19 and you're in or a teenager.
First 20 minutes of that movie is great.
Yeah.
And then it goes to next player,
as
whatever.
As we talked about on last week, 2 weeks ago, the podcast, the biggest grossing of the movie. You know, are we all out of touch as critics? Because the 10 top grossing movies of the film are either action, superhero, comic book movies, and I don't really care about any of them. So
we stand above that fray, except for The Hate U Give.
The movie I thought it would be so much better is a movie that I was so looking forward to with Saoirse Ronan called On Chesil Beach, and I was like so excited to see that movie. The trailer looked great, and it was okay, but I thought it was going to be like...
I recall you kind of digging that movie when
I
we did
it
on...
okay.
Yeah, all right.
I just thought it was going to be great.
Had lunch with Saoirse Ronan yesterday for American.
And before I get to my number one, we go around with number one pick. I'd say it's the year of too much Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Rampage.
Bill
Bergoglio and I saw together, and I think we got real bad headaches after walking out of that piece of shit. You know,
yeah,
and then
he
followed up
bad.
By Skyscraper.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's Skyscraper. Okay.
He's right. Sitting on his pile of money.
So
he says
I'm
hello
go
to you.
Last. Tell your number one movie of the year, Bill Bergoglio.
The favorite.
The favorite.
Right. Okay.
We've
talked about it.
I know.
You want to add some
I have a guess. In fact, I've already written it down because I saw Kreskin's act.
Oh.
Let's get to Bill McCuddy's.
Well, no, let him have his guess.
You want to guess my number one movie of the year? Or you want
I'm guessing Bill's.
Go ahead.
Science fair.
I sent you that. Come on.
No, he wouldn't.
No, I didn't pay any attention.
Oh. Yeah, science fair is this, and I'm really sad to report it's a documentary.
Yeah,
it's
right.
About the nerd prom that happens every year in Los Angeles, and I'm actually quoted as saying, this is embarrassing, but I don't mind. I'm actually quoted as saying it doesn't take Einstein to figure out this is going to the Oscars. And now guess what? It's not. It didn't make the shortlist that you said was only in the Hollywood Reporter.
Well, that's
why
I guess it was number one, because you hinted that.
I love this movie. It's a documentary, and there's some amazing performances in it. The kids are great. It's an international comedy, thriller, and National Geographic made it. And I don't care what the Oscars say. Watch that movie.
Well, Kreskin, what would be my number one movie of the year? Because I did, unlike Bill McCuddy, and I believe you, Bill, 100% that you had no idea that he was going to pick Science Fair, although I know he did. But nobody knows my number one pick. So what would my number one pick be? I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
Other than Bill McCuddy.
I have Kreskin's business card.
I'll tell you a quick Kreskin story.
You ever meet him?
No,
we don't have time.
I'm hosting this show.
Did he break your arm when he shook your hand?
Yeah, the Wise Guy show at Sirius Satellite Radio. I used to host the show a lot.
You made fun of me for making an old reference earlier. Nobody listening is going to have any fucking idea who Kreskin
is. Kreskin is a psychic guy, and his whole big act was that they hide his check, his appearance fee, and he has to find it. And anyway,
well, that was real. We can do a whole thing about Kreskin another time, but he really could.
He shook my hand and almost pulled it out of the socket.
No, that's what he's famous for.
And then there's a Malkovich movie, which kind of like parodies that, where he plays a Kreskin character who does that. I don't remember the name of the movie. But anyway, I will say that my movie, before I tell you what it is, nobody's seen this movie. Nobody's seen it. And it's the it's the greatest movie. And it's called All About Nina.
And I
saw it at the Tribeca Film Festival.
Yeah.
And it's released by a company called The Orchard. For whatever reason, maybe they don't have the financial means, maybe they didn't believe in the movie enough, but I think that Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who stars in this movie, that is the best female. Well, that or Amanda Stenberg. It's between those two for the best female performance of the year. But Mary Elizabeth Winstead, man, does she deserve an Oscar nomination, maybe even the Oscar. She plays a...
Independent spirit, maybe.
She plays a comedian who's in New York, who's in an abusive relationship with a married guy played by Chase Crawford. She's an edgy comic. She's also addicted to a lot of stuff. And she goes out to L.A. to start life anew and do her comedy out there. And she meets somebody else who's really messed up, played by Common, the rapper Common.
Mm-hmm.
And they forged a friendship. And if you think you know where this is going, you really don't. And I would say that, you know, when she's in L.A., in addition to struggling with her addiction problems and her relationship problem with Common, and I didn't necessarily say it's a romantic relationship, she is being courted, sort of, or trying to get on this show that's sort of like a Saturday Night Live that's being done in L.A., and that guy's played by Beau Bridges, who's sort of like a Lorne Michaels character.
Sort of?
Well, okay, he's supposed to be Lorne Michaels. And it ties into the Me Too movement. And
it's a lot like the Mike Birbiglia movie that you like a lot.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. Well,
that's about an improv.
Just Say Anything or whatever the improv group thing.
Well, anyway.
It borrows a lot from that to be your number one, but okay.
Okay, this movie blew me away. My favorite documentary, by the way, is Bathtubs Over Broadway, which is done by this guy from the Letterman Show. Right.
Please, make this podcast longer.
But anyway, let's go back to All About Nina. Nobody knows all. My wife is laughing in the background. All About Nina. I feel like nobody promotes the movie. It's a great movie. It's today.
Well, it's all on your little shoulders, isn't
starting it? Starting today, December 18th, the day we're recording it. Yes. It is available on iTunes and it is available in other places.
Yeah, it's not in my top 10, but I could recommend that movie. I mean, it's got an aha moment near the end that you'll.
First time female director, Eva Vevez.
Right.
Writer director. Semi-autobiographical, actually. She's great. I think the performances are great, but more importantly, I think the story is just amazing. I didn't know where it was going. At every turn, it surprised me, and it's just a phenomenal movie. Please see All About Nina.
Well, there it is. That's the top, the best and the worst of the year. Well, most of the best. A couple of things we didn't like. We already told you how much we didn't like Roma last week. So
what do we do all year here, Bill?
We watch the bad movies so you don't have to, and... Your wife is put up with you the way our audience puts up with you every week.
I can say the same about your wife.
For that, we are very
grateful.
Because
we usually do this at your place, Bill.
That's right.
And we have done it on one occasion.
Okay, you can come back if you want.
I'd like to come back. You served cold cuts. It was really.
Your wife now has a knife in her hand. Be very careful. All right.
There you go. So anyway, you could reach me at Neil Rosen Apples on Twitter. And you could reach Bill McCuddy.
At Bill McCuddy and Bergoglio's.
I don't do Twitter. All the cool kids are quitting Twitter.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I'll still be there forever.
So try to find them on Facebook. Anyway.
Hey, Happy New Year, everybody. And thank you so much for joining us this year and for your support. And if you know someone who wants to sponsor this thing, please, I'm tired of saying LaCroix. Let's actually make them pay for it.
There you go. Thank you. And thanks for sitting around with us, listening to movies with us this year. And we'll sit around talking movies with you as well all next year.
Although maybe not talking that well.